Jema. Since it is a special, very special birthday month of the mother, and we had kept collected works as we were doing, so volume 13 we had kept that portion on the mother intact, that we'll read it in February. And then I forgot about it. So we entered into volume 14. Today I suddenly remembered, oh, we have kept it. So I checked and found out, yes, we have not taken that. So it's the birthday month of the mother, and people, of course, talk about, she is infinite actually. I don't know what to say. But what is important is the difference between, first of all, how as an Indian we approach the divine advent and how generally it is understood. So there are people, when they write a biography, standard biography, recently something has been written about the mother and of course Sri Aurobindo. So the material vision is, it sees from outside and then it tries to see the value. So value is what? So when they read about Sri Aurobindo, then his outer life is amazing. I mean, even otherwise you are led to conclude when you see the amount of work he did during the freedom struggle. He rose as the shining star of freedom, a yogi who is, you know, recognized and world over. Savitri, which is such a unique people who came when he physically withdrew. So it's easy for people to recognize that, you know, here is Sri Aurobindo, and he is at least great, if not the greatest of the great, at least they recognize it. But with the mother, it's very strange, because if you read her life, there are many great things in her life also. I mean, I could recount. People know that as an artist, some of her paintings are displayed in the best art gallery in the world, Louvre in France. And when she has come, she has translated the whole portion of Isha Upanishad in the original writings you will see in Sanskrit. Then her occult descriptions of all her occult journeyings and what she described, I have at least not found anywhere in any of the yogic literature. When she speaks about 12 bodies, not just 7, but 12, not even 5, 12 bodies in which she could come out successively. But these are not things which are outwardly recognized or known. And most important is that she preferred to stay in the background. So, like Radha. So, everybody knows Krishna. But where does Krishna go and lean upon? It is Radha. So, mother has been like that. She is the one who manifested everything of Sri Aurobindo's vision. At one place, she even says that, Sri Aurobindo says, one of the many things he has written, one of the things is that, without the mother's coming, when someone wrote that mother as a disciple of Sri Aurobindo, and Sri Aurobindo clarified, mother is not a disciple of Sri Aurobindo. She had realized all these great truths before she came here. And you can see it, she came in 1914, read her writings of 1912. All the whole program of the future, individually, collectively, everything is there. Even the supramental, coming of the new race, everything is there in mother's writings. And earlier, so she says that she had entered the supermind through the front door, while I entered through the side door. So side door for Sri Aurobindo was that he was working for India's freedom. And so he sought the divine so that he could have the shakti to get freedom. That was his seeking. And then the divine showed him the path of mankind's freedom in which he had to play a central part. But initially it started with India's freedom. So he had to engage in yoga. If you read records of yoga, it's amazing. It's like human consciousness cannot undertake that yoga except as a gift of grace. Of course, he doesn't even write the method that he did for arriving at the results. But those results include Trikal Drishti and whatnot. And see, Sri Aurobindo's Trikal Drishti people speak of. Now, in one of the conversation that the mother has with Sri Aurobindo, Sri Aurobindo asked her, now you see, Sri Aurobindo has a Trikal Drishti and he wants to confirm something. So he asked the mother about India's freedom. that he has seen it, but he wants to confirm it. And the mother says, that is all that is decided. And then that's how Sri Aurobindo writes, the freedom of India is decided. So she had known it 32 years before the freedom came. And so it is so amazing. She had many, one could go on describing all that she has foreseen. And they are so wonderfully true. Slowly you can see disintegration of Pakistan. Today I was speaking about it. That in the playground you will see the map of United India. So people had asked the mother that, mother, this map must have been made before the partition, before independence. And she clarified, no, this map has been made after the partition. This is the true map of United India, the spiritual map of India. Now in 40s, even 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, maybe 90s, people would have doubted. Theek hai, it's a nice sentiment. Today, people are discussing when will the final disintegration take place. Actually, the country is a country, it is finished. It's just holding on. There is no money, nothing. And five parts. He spoke about Pakistan disintegrating into five parts and then they will come together and become one. Based on her, the other day, just about few weeks back, when India-US trade tensions were very high and all kinds of predictions were going around, passingly I had mentioned, this is a passing thing, they will both become friends again. Because it is needed for the world. And today you see the whole scenario changes because she has foreseen, and she is not just foreseen, she is doing it. So that is the mother, but she preferred always to remain in the background, and it is because of her will that people don't know. In fact, in one of the plays she says that, I prefer to remain in the background, let them worship thee to thy heart's content, to their heart's content. I'll tell you about how foolish human beings can be. So there is a writing of the mother where she says, let them worship thee to their heart's content. As for myself, I want to remain behind and do the work. Now people have taken it as a reason we should not worship. So they don't even know, there is no need to go to the samadhi and do, because mother has said, let them worship thee, as if she is putting down worship. She is not saying that. It is her very personal feeling that she doesn't want to be worshipped. She has come to do the work. So this is how, anyway, that's human consciousness. So she has done the work very silently. And that's why Sri Aurobindo says, before the mother's coming, I could go ahead and complete my transformation. But it would have been impossible to give this yoga to the world and enter into world transformation. This project would have remained incomplete. So with the mother's coming, everything became possible. When one of the so-called masters, he said about Sri Aurobindo that Sri Aurobindo is sitting on the path because he was not doing anything actively outwardly in 1915. So a disciple asked him, he said, that could be said before. But after the mother's coming, 10 years of the yoga has been covered in 1 year's time. And everything that we see today, because of which we are able to connect, the Arya, all the writings, it is the mother who actually impelled, I don't know what word, to Sri Aurobindo to write. And that's how it started as a journal. The ashram, it started by the mother. As soon as she came, she started that it should become self-sufficient. So she started Honesty Society, which was about honest business. So that's how we see today the ashram has developed into a self-sustaining community. It's a very interesting ashram. It doesn't rely on donations. It doesn't ask for donations. Money comes. Yes, it's always welcome because divine work is endless. But it's not that the ashram is built on need or asking for donations. Nobody will ask you. There are donation boxes in the ashram. It's up to you to offer and be part. And there also, mother has said very clearly, and so has Sri Aurobindo, it's a privilege to be able to offer. Because you then connect with something of the work. It's not like you must offer. No such compulsion. So she is the one who organized, and what a way the whole ashram has developed. Ashram entirely is her organization, and Sri Aurobindo says that very clearly, that there would have been no possibility of an ashram. And we see only the outer side. But if you really look at it from 1926, now it's 100 years, we are going to enter into the ashram's 100 year with minimum per day, whatever. I mean, now it is 50 rupees per day. For a long time, there was no money charged. And then you had some 20 rupees coupon. If you joined, if you were part of the guest house, then you automatically, you got the ashram coupon, dining room coupon. So much later, some 20 rupees or something was the cost. And now it is 50. Now, just imagine that there are days when there are just the regular ashram inmates, maybe 2000 or less than that. Ashram inmates are 1200, 1300. But total, let's say floating population, around 2000. On darshan days, the crowd swells to 10,000. Things are managed. So there is a very interesting story of how behind the scenes mother has worked. So one day the granary person, Narayan Prasadji, was working there and he asked the mother, he says, oh, suddenly we realize so many people have come and I was not informed, because this message used to go to the mother. Even now, everything, mother is informed as the people come, they take the tokens. This all goes behind the scene. How she does it, she only knows. So this was told to the mother, that suddenly it seems that, you know, we'll run short of rice. So mother says, oh, you didn't tell me. Anyways, you go there, don't look into the granary, don't look inside, and keep on taking out the grains. So this is documented in Life in the Sri Aurobindo Ashram by Narayan Prasad. So he literally obeyed the mother, didn't look inside, and kept on taking out. And it was enough to take care of. You know, we have heard these stories of Ma Annapurna and, you know, Draupadi's Akshayapatra. So there are many, many such stories, the way it has come and how she has intervened. So one has to enter into that to understand who the mother is. If you just want to read the intellectual side, then of course Sri Aurobindo is there. But even in intellectual side, it is very strange. Many people are not aware that there is a collected works of the mother. And there's some, the only word I can think of is fools, who think there is no need to read because I have read the Life Divine. You cannot walk the path of yoga unless you read the mother. All the right from prayers and meditations, volume 2, volume 3, very first question, tell us something about yoga, where she speaks about concentrating on the fire in the heart. Then she speaks about becoming conscious. If you read volume 3, you will see the entire yoga given there, all that is necessary to know. So it is so amazing that everywhere you see the footprint of the mother, the action of the mother. Every house here has a story of the mother. And many of us must be fortunate enough to go and visit some of the sadhaks. Every house, and it has its own unique tale to tell. This is her leela, which doesn't go outside, because outside you see collection of books. So you see what outwardly makes a name. But this is how she has got into the yoga. And that's why when someone asked her, what is meant by initiation in this yoga? Who can we say is initiated? Because there is no formal initiation. Nobody, there is no Swamiji, Panditji, Yogiji who says you are in the yoga. Right from there. It's not today. Right from Sri Aurobindo's time, there was nothing like that. People sometimes would ask him, sir, when are you going to initiate it? Said, you're already part of the ashram. Aren't you initiated already? Do you have to be formally initiated? It was not relevant at all, because they worked. So, in thought, if they have thought about somebody, he's pulled. So, the mother uses a word very interestingly. There is a little sentence, the only place where mother speaks of initiation. And she is asked that, when can we say that one is initiated into the yoga? She says, well, when I say that I have initiated someone into the yoga, it means I have revealed myself to that person. As simple as that. You know she is the mother. That's what it means. Why? There is no logic to it. And there's so many examples many of us would have. I remember one of them in Bangalore Center when we were working. And one of the intellectual, he said, I don't know why you people worship the mother, because one Bengali fellow, then Sri Aurobindo is Bangla. Mother, France, French lady, it's okay. Then he says, I understand she was a great organizer, a good administrator. Why do you worship her as divine mother? So I told him in Bangla, ekhoni apni bujhte parben na. I didn't. I said, right now you won't understand. So he took it, intellectual man, did very well in one of the companies. Then Sri Aurobindo's relics came. And that day he was crying and crying. Suddenly he was crying. So I asked him, took him aside. I said, what happened? This is just some parts of Sri Aurobindo. Why are you crying? All of us were crying. I don't know. I cannot understand. After that, the kind he turned to the mother and opened to the mother. It was so amazing. So there is a time. Actually speaking, if you ask me, this yoga in real earnest begins when you know that she is the mother. And then life changes. Before that, it's good. Intellectually, one can engage. One can do swadhyaya, satsang. Everything is fine. There is a preparation. But the day you know that she is the divine mother, and no intellect, it's not based on any intellectual, oh, you know, she's the mother based on this or that, nothing. It's an inner revelation. Of course, her stories are there, wonderful stories, many, many stories. The day the heart feels, and this cannot be done by anybody's pressure, but the day the heart feels that yes, she is the divine mother, one is finished. So she says, when I say I have initiated someone, it means I have revealed myself to that person. So such is the beauty and joy of the mother. And yet, as I was saying, in India, when you write the biography of, let's say, Sri Krishna. So one of the standard biographies of Sri Krishna in the ancient tradition sense is Srimad Bhagavat Puran, isn't it? When does the life of Sri Krishna actually come in that? Much, much, much later, 500 pages down the lines, then you will have Krishna avatar. So why? Because the importance is based on this inner truth. It's not based on what you outwardly did. In the entire Mahabharata bar, Sri Krishna is sitting quietly on the chariot. He gives the Gita, he blows the conch, he does the, he is the charioteer of Arjun. But the inner truth is something very different. Even about Hitler's, when he died, Second World War, Sri Aurobindo used the word, it is the mother's war. Mother's war. And when Hitler, news was there that he has probably vanished, people didn't know that whether Hitler is alive or dead, because there was 2-3 days of suspense. So a sadhika that night saw that the mother is on a horse, and a white horse. White horse is mother's shakti. That's how Kalki is described. So, and she is as if like Durga, with a sword she slays Hitler. So he asked, there is a question where he asked Sri Aurobindo, I have seen this, is it true? Sri Aurobindo replies, what you have seen is true, wait for the confirmation. Nobody knows. People talk about, and she didn't care, because it had to be done, it had to be done. We talk today about supramental manifestation. Entirely, you see, mother says, I saw that, I heard the voice, he said, the time has come, and with one stroke, she blew open the lid. And you'll be surprised how this division comes. There are people who have written books on Sri Aurobindo, who have turned reading Sri Aurobindo. They don't believe in the supramental manifestation event of 29th February. Because Sri Aurobindo is physically not there to confirm it. There are people. I had a very interesting discussion also. And they have written book on Sri Aurobindo's life. They are famous people who give talks on Sri Aurobindo. But somehow, because if you, it's only when you are ready for the yoga, that there will be an inner revelation of who the mother is. And the yoga itself cannot be done without the mother. That's very, very clear. Sri Aurobindo has mentioned, this yoga you cannot do without the mother. You can, I mean, the mother, at the end he says, no human power or tapasya can rend the veil. It is only the mother who can do it. He himself did not take it that, well, I will do it for you. It is the mother. So that is the mother, and we could continue speaking you know, any number of days, and yet it will not exhaust. So who is the mother? As I said, in India, the value of the person is derived from the deepest inner truth and not vice versa. Today we see outward action and we think the person is great. So if apparently the Britishers handed over Azadi or, you know, during that time, Gandhiji was there, Nehruji was there. So suddenly, you know, you hear songs like, De di hame Azadi bina khadak bina dhal, Sabarmati ke sant tune kar diya kamal. So they start, you know, praising. This is not how Indian mind works. Sri Krishna, before the war begins, says very clearly, he says, look here, I am showing you the truth. He showed the truth in Kuru Sabha. He showed the truth to Arjun. And then he says, you choose. Arjun chose to be the instrument. Rest is history. So mother had not only seen, and Shurbindu mentions that she had seen India free 32 years before India got freedom. And when India was given fractured division because of people's foolishness, then mother went into a deep trance when she came to know, and when they made the flag of India, where there are so-called to appease, so there is, green color and saffron color, and there is always a band of forced truce, white color, trying to save them from fighting into each other, and with the Ashok Chakra, which is very strange. Anyways, Ashok Chakra itself is a very interesting subject. Now, it is interesting, when mother saw that this is the flag which has been approved, mother's flag had also gone, by the way. So you know what she said? She went into a trance, 47. And then she notes to Pranabdha, it's there in his book, I remember. She said, what I foresee is lot of bloodshed. India will have to go through a lot of difficulties now. Because they have rejected what Sri Aurobindo had asked them. He wanted that accept Krip's proposal, it's just a question of time. And we see many nations were given like Commonwealth status, they are all free now. But people didn't accept. Stanford Cripps came to Pondicherry. He thanked Sri Aurobindo that at least you understood what we are wanting. And it was refused. And the flag accepted. And the mother said that this is going to be now a terrible period for time to come. Now when you talk about times of nation, then period is not just 5 years, 10 years. It runs into, decades, if not centuries. And we are so fortunate that recently when I heard about the Bande Mataram song, what is interesting is not only Bande Mataram has been made like a compulsory part of, of course they can't change it to national anthem. Sri Aurobindo writes of Bande Mataram as a national anthem. These are Sri Aurobindo's words. And it was debated whether it should become the national anthem. But ultimately, because there is mention of Durga, so they dropped the two stanzas, took up the Janagana Mana, which is only about the outer body. It doesn't describe the soul of India. And Bande Mataram reveals the soul and the inner being of India. Anybody can see it. Janagana Mana describes all the different states and Bharat Bhagya Vidhata. But India is the mother, the soul, and she is so full inside. So it has taken how many years? 150 years since Bande Mataram was born. And 120 years since it became the cry of the Indian nation, that they have accepted Bande Mataram, the resolution has been passed. But what is interesting is that all the 6 stanzas have been accepted. Just imagine, it has taken 77 years. And does anyone know the 6 stanzas? Why they were not accepted? Because the last two are, Tvam hi Durga Dash Praharana Dharini Amala Kamala Dala Viharini. So they said it's about goddess, it's about Hindu. And they were so fools that they didn't accept. Mother said Durga is the presiding deity of India. It's not about being a goddess. And she has written what Sri Aurobindo wrote in Durga Strot. The mother, you'll find it in collected works also, in volume 12, where she said, that every nation has a living soul and a guardian deity. It was known in ancient times. If you read some of the Greek literature, this is a guardian deity. Egypt, you will see a guardian deity. That truth has been lost post-Christianity and Islam because there is nothing like that. But India always remembered it, that there is a guardian deity and that is Durga. And these two stanzas which were dropped continued in the ashram. So it gave me a lot of joy inwardly that, see, in the ashram we always sung these full six stanzas and the whole map of United India. You see how recently things have started changing and we are getting back parts of India which had fragmented. So ultimately it is truth that wins. Whatever may happen, Satyameva Jayate is an ancient truth. Yes, it takes time. It takes maybe a century, maybe a couple of lives for an individual. But truth always wins. So all this is, we really owe India to the Mother and Aurobindo, freedom of India. We owe the freedom of mankind, the path to Mother and Aurobindo. And how much ever gratitude we may have will never be enough. So, well, I could just flow on because it's such a deep, emotional subject. Mother Anant, Ma Katha Ananta. Ma Anant, Ma Katha Ananta. But as I said, this part I had not read. We had skipped from volume 13 of Collected Works of Mother to volume 14. I deliberately left it that in February we will read it. And I had forgotten about it. We started volume 14. And today I remember that, oh, we have not read it. So right just before, she has reminded. So who is the mother? So as I said, it has to start from within outward. The value of a person is not based on what he has outwardly done and achieved, but what he inwardly is and becomes. So who is the mother? There are some of her own writings. Sri Aurobindo has written, we know that the mother, that's the most best biography of the mother, which is available now as a separate book. Six letters. Sixth letter, letter number six, is entirely about who the mother is inwardly. So when he says the one whom we adore as the divine mother, is about the mother. It's not just about the one whom we adore as, you know, Jagan Mata. The mother, the one whom we adore as the divine mother, is the consciousness force of the supreme. One and yet so many sided. So the mother herself, what does she write? Now, I am reading something in 1912, before she has met Sri Aurobindo. And these are her notes, diary notes, which later on became published. So what has she written in 1912? She has not met Sri Aurobindo. Since the beginning of the earth, whenever, wherever and whenever there was the possibility of manifesting a ray of the consciousness, I was there. So if you count her avatar, there will be no limit. Whenever and wherever. Of course, we know some of the names which we have spoken about. And 1912, when she was asked to speak, Abdul Baha, son of Baha'u'llah, and she requested, he was not well, so he wanted her to address the gathering. So mother initially said, no, I won't. Then he insisted and requested. So she spoke. So people thought that, you know, maybe she has become a Baha'i follower or anything like that. So she clarifies in the beginning. There's a note with regard to that. That which is speaking to you now, is a whole prayer of mother. Yesterday thy light had manifested through my mouth. So when mother speaks, we can imagine. That which is speaking to you now is a faithful servant of the divine. From all time since the beginning of the earth, as a faithful servant of the divine, it has spoken in the name of its master. She is teaching us how to be. She taught literally when she came to Pondicherry, she taught the sadhaks how to be with Sri Aurobindo. People were sitting on the chair along with him, side by side. And Sri Aurobindo would raise questions and Sri Aurobindo would answer. When she came, she sat on the floor, teaching by example that he is the Lord, and be on the floor before him. And Shobhita would never say. She also didn't say. People would sit by her side. Amrit Das says that, writes ki we would sit together when she came initially, and we would read yoga and its objects. He says, I could just sense she is great beyond measure. But I could not imagine now how was I sitting next to her and she said nothing. Then one day he writes to Sri Aurobindo. I think, Amrita writes, I think Meera is a great yogi. Suddenly. But she does not come out and give meditations. Mother didn't. She remained in the room. She would hardly, except for looking after Sri Aurobindo, she was not. Later on, as the sadhaks came, she started looking after everyone. Automatically, she assumed the role of the mother. Everything. And the way she looked after in every detail. If you go to mother's room, you'll see a little tray where there were 8 different flasks of different sizes. So I thought, you know, normally you keep a flask maybe for Sri Aurobindo, she has kept. Then I was told, no. All these flasks are for different people who were mainly working at that point of time. And to each one, she would make something which is specific to that person. So one person will have soup, the other person will have a different soup, the third person will have milk, sometimes with cocoa. All this, 8 flasks. There must have been many other things like that. What a care! And these were all meant for different children who are working. But when mother came to Sri Aurobindo's room, Sri Aurobindo will get up and make something for her. Of course, it's a leela which is very wonderful. And when they would talk, Champak Lalji was a listener to everything. He was like in the privy of the gods. So mother had told him only one thing. Champak Lal, you have heard, keep silent. Never speak anything about all that you have heard. Why? Because they were asuras who were outwardly great, but they were talking about everything. What experiences, and they could never, you know, speak about it. He never, that's why at one point, though he didn't stop speaking because of that, but this is an event which took place long back. But then he would never say what discussions took place. So that kind of leela. So Sri Aurobindo, he goes and Amrita writes to Sri Aurobindo, she is a great yogin, it seems. He says, yes, she is a very great yogin. And the day she comes out, she doesn't give meditation. The day she comes out, that would be indeed a very great day. So we can say that 24th November 1926, she came out. And that's when Sri Aurobindo withdrew. And from then onwards, it was the mother in the forefront. And whoever wanted to disregard that rule, Barinda, Motilal, Roy, none of these could stay. It was, there is a letter of Sri Aurobindo written to Monida or one of the persons I am forgetting where, okay, there were a couple of people, their names are not important because there are some more, whom she says, if you cannot accept the mother, then what are you doing living in the ashram? Because you cannot do this yoga without her. That was the place that he gave. And yet mother would take, see how she would, she's showing us the way. I am a servant of the Lord. Sri Aurobindo says she is the divine mother, Divya Shakti, but she would, as far as the Lord, she is here to serve him. They are very sweet stories when a sadhak would bring Tulsi bead mala from Gujarat, he would bring on Janamashtami for Sri Aurobindo. And Sri Aurobindo would request that please wear it on the darshan on 15th August. They are very close events. Even now on the calendar, Janmashtami and Sri Aurobindo's birthday are generally, you know, a week apart, or sometimes I think last year they were on the same day. So Sri Aurobindo would wear it and then pass it on. He would give it to mother and mother would hang them. They are also there. If you go, all of them are there. all the different times, you know, they were given to the mother, to Sri Aurobindo. So when she was asked to speak, so she says, well, and as long as earth and men exist, it will be there in a body to preach the divine word. She will use any body, and she will be there in a body to preach the divine word. She says that as long as there is earth and humanity. So, wherever I am asked to speak, I do my best as a servant of the divine. What a humbling thing for everybody who is speaking in the name of Sri Aurobindo and the mother. That's why some people don't understand, but I must clarify today. So when people start doing Mahima Mandan of the speakers, they start giving mala and all this, it sounds so grotesque. Mother will speak. Everything, and sometimes crazy things. There will be a photograph of the mother on the side and speakers are sitting on the dais as if they are kings. She is teaching us the way. You are a servant of the Lord, and this is such a great joy. This is an aphorism of Sri Aurobindo. God's servant is something. God's slave is greater. Who is slave? Slave and servant. Servant is a pay. He works and he wants something. Dihadi ka mazdoor. 6 ghanta ashram mein kaam karenge. Who is slave? He can ask nothing. Slave cannot say, I want something in return. So what does the divine give him? He is always in the company of the divine. Because slave has to be 24 hours. Slave is slave. So he cannot run away. He will be always there. But just imagine God's slave. Hanuman, Nandi. So they are showing, she is showing us the way. I am servant of the Lord. So don't expect. So, but to speak in the name of a particular doctrine or of a man, however great he may be, that I cannot do. This is the sign of being her slave. You cannot after that speak somebody, something, all this. Because she has picked you. And then she says, why I cannot speak? Not out of ego. She says, the eternal transcendent forbids me. It's not because I cannot speak. I can speak on anyone. But the Supreme himself is forbidding me to speak in the name. This she is saying because she was speaking with Abdul Baha. Then there is a note of 1920. And this shows us such a way how to be. I belong to no nation. Biography is mentioned that she was born in France. But she is saying, I belong to no nation. She was born there. She came here, but she doesn't belong. There is a difference. I belong to no nation, no civilization, no society, no race, but to the divine. That's why when Sri Aurobindo was asked about the mother, he said, Mira is born free. He did not say this in a written conversation. He said this to Barin and to a couple of people who asked them, who is she? Great European yogi. He said, oh, she is born free. You can't say anything about her. I obey no master, no ruler, no law, no social convention but the divine. That's why her action cannot be understood. Because we look at everything from the lens of convention. Convention is necessary for mankind struggling in ignorance. But if you see the mother's action in the ashram, the way she has, when egg was served in the ashram, I'm just saying that, you know, how when she could take such a strong, like a so some people wanted a message from her for the vegetarian congress or something like that. Mother didn't give. For 2 months she didn't give any message. So people continued to ask. Now you see, in India there were vegetarians and non-vegetarians. All the Kshatriyas were non-vegetarian. Nothing special about it. Many of the Rajarishis were non-vegetarians if you read their life. But we have developed this kind of fad. Now it's good to be vegetarian. It's healthy. I myself would not take, but to make a fetish of it. So she said, I had a very strong message to give, but I have held it back. What has that got to do with spiritual life? It has its place. By all means, be a vegetarian, doesn't matter. So then she gave a message, cling to truth. That also people misunderstood. So she says, I obey no master but the divine. It is said that when people would ask after coming to the ashram, some advanced sadhaks, so one Hardan Bakshi was there. Bakshi, not Bakshi, sorry. he was a military man, ex-military. And he was from Punjab and he would, you know, he had lost his mind a little. So anyways, if you take to this yoga, you have lost your mind a little. Which is a good thing. If you are a very normal person, you live a normal life. So suddenly, he said, I'll tell you who are the advanced sadhaks here. But don't tell this to anyone. So he can. Oh, there are only two advanced sadhaks. Shri Bindu and the mother. And he said, what do you mean? He says, see, Shri Bindu has surrendered completely to the mother. And the mother has surrendered completely to Shri Bindu. If something Shri Bindu would say, the mother would change completely everything. If something the mother would say, Shri Aurobindo would completely change. And there is a famous story which is there in 12 years that Niruddha is going to play tennis. And he asked Shri Aurobindo, give me your blessings. And he gave the blessings. He smiled and gave the blessings. In the match he lost. So he comes and tells Shri Aurobindo, he says, you didn't realize the opponent had taken blessing from the mother. Shri Aurobindo's way. He says he had gone and taken blessing from the mother. You didn't do that. It was a very beautiful way of teaching him where to surrender, whom to surrender. He says, what to do? Now my blessing versus mother's. So obviously she is Shakti, Supreme Shakti. So she says, now something which is a take-home point for all of us, and I think if we remember this passage is a whole sadhana. People ask, how is this yoga done? What mantra? What japa? What meditation? What work? This, if we can follow, nothing else is required. It's so difficult to do it. And what is she saying? Because this is the path she has gone through. She is showing us her path. To him, I have surrendered all. Will, life, self. After that, you can't make any demand. I want this, I want that. Then it's not surrender anymore. Surrender means whatever you will. I am ready to give. What we are ready to give? Take out some cash and put it in the hundi. That too, extra cash. This is a very beautiful experience once. Very old Sadhika was telling me. She said one day, she is clairvoyant, so she would hear mother's voice time to time. She says, Dr. Pandey, I have to narrate something to you. So I knew that some of these experiences she would suddenly come. She says, I went to Shri Aurobindo's room. Suddenly I realized that I am not able to find the money in my purse. So she was getting tense because she has carried the purse and she has gone to Shri Aurobindo's room for offering and comes from a fairly rich family so much. And she's getting tense that, oh, I have to offer, I have to offer. Then she hears mother's voice. She hears, you can offer the money anywhere in the ashram. Here, offer yourself. You offer yourself. You forget about the world. Money, this, that. Another lady was telling me, she is still alive here, so I won't take the name. She went with her son, 4-year-old, and the son is 4-year-old. He's 4-year-old. So she is going to do pranam, and the son is doing all the here, there, and she is trying to, hey, listen, hey, try to do this, that. Mother suddenly looks at her, says, you don't worry about him. I am his mother also. Takes her head, puts it in her lap. And she says, I completely forgot everything after that. Why are you worried? In front of mother you are worrying about. There are so many such beautiful stories. Somebody giving a murjaya vaful. And the mother, all that she does is takes in a hand, and while she is having a conversation, quietly caressing. And the lady had this thought in her head. That mother, first she thought I should change. She saw that this flower is gone. She thought she should change. Then she said, but I am also like this, murjhaya hua, faded flower. So it reflects what I am. At least this flower will tell the truth of who I am. So mother kept on caressing. And the flower came fully alive. Of course, she has spoken of all this, that she had learnt all this even as in the occult, that how she could keep a flower and make it completely alive. So she says, you see, even if you are a faded flower, you can completely blossom by my touch. She had read all the thoughts, so many instances. One of them, which today I was mentioning about Shyamdi, she said as a child she was going and mother would give flowers. So suddenly she wanted a rose, and the rose, all of them got over. Just, if, you know, she is still behind. So the person gave another tray which had some other flower. I have forgotten the name, probably, you know, Champa, some other flower. So I don't remember. So she said, oh my God, I wanted a rose. Anyways. So when she goes to the mother, mother looks into her eyes, see the playfulness. Suddenly she puts her hand below, takes out a tray of rose. And says, so, you thought that the roses are over? Here is one for you. And there's so many stories. She knows our intimate thoughts. Yet we must tell her. Why? Because that's the joy of the Leela. She has said this. When somebody asks that, why should we tell, you know everything? She said, yes, I know everything. I know all your thoughts. But I want to see how much you know. Because, and this is an experience I'm sure many sadhaks had. I have had in my own little way. You try to give her a very nice, neat story about your life or something which has happened. Where you are a good guy. Now what happens is, you have told to the mother. Slowly you will see layer after layer, things will begin to come out. Till you stand naked and say, mother, okay, I need to change. Absolutely bare, like a baby. Which is not easy for many people, because we are in all our stories, everybody's story, that person is the hero, the good guy, the best person. Everybody else has done a mistake. Now here it's not about mistake or right or wrong. It's about the inner truth and the outer. So she bears it, sees, and then of course the inmost truth is the aspiration, which is where she connects with. So this is the program for all of us, with which probably we could stop. To him, I have surrendered all, will, life, self. For him, I am ready to give all my blood, drop by drop, if such is his will. This is based on her own life story in a previous life. It is there in Radha's prayer also. When the lady was dancing for Radha? Sahanadi, yes. Thank you. So she was dancing and the mother said, you are being too self-conscious. This is not Radha's state. And then she describes what is Radha's state when she stands before the Lord. She just gives and gives and gives. She has forgotten everything. That's how the Radha's prayer came into existence. She speaks of this experience long back. There is a Chaldean legend. Mother spoke about Chaldea, and surely she was someone there, prominent priestess, some. We don't know really. She never said that. She says an ancient Chaldean legend, and she, we know that anarful pomegranate flower, she has named it as divine love. And the anar fruit as the fruit of divine sacrifice. So she tells a story. She used to give this flower on Kali Puja day. So she told the story in ancient Chaldean legend, where they were, you know, somebody had lived for the Lord, had sacrificed everything for the Lord, and yet people didn't understand. So they were chasing the mystic, and then, you know, ultimately was killed, it's understood, but with every drop that fell there, that drop of blood due to the sacrifice, grew up into a tree. Now, a disciple asked, Mother, what was his name? And Mother says, how do you know that it was a he? How do you know it was a he? It was not a he. So it's very evident. Why she has hid it? Let us, respect that she has hid it. Her own reasons. And so she says, all my blood. We appreciate, no? When Bhule Shah says, Teri talwar ke niche mein nachiyan karke thaiyan thaiyan. That every drop of mine is. This is the state of the sadhak. This is sadhana. It is not about sitting bolstered in meditation and doing something inside and having a beautiful experience. It's this kind of giving which brings results. She says, for him, it's not that you have to cut and give something, no. But you are ready, whatever is required, needed by the divine, happily. For him I am ready to give all my blood, drop by drop, if such is his will, with complete joy. And nothing in his service can be sacrificed, for all his perfect delight. Krishna Prema had come to the ashram. We know that he was Dilip Kumar Roy's friend and a kind of mentor. A lot of exchange between the two. And when he came to the ashram, he said, I want to have darshan of your divine mother. So mother gave him darshan. He was very faithful to his own guru, Yashodama. Whose husband had met Sri Aurobindo in France when he handed over a book of the Gita. That is just an aside story. He is the one who had given a very poor translation, not Sri Aurobindo, to the mother. Very poor translation of the Gita to the mother. And she was a yogini. She was known as Yashodama. I don't remember her correct name. And Krishprem was her disciple. And he lived there all his life, Almora. So when he came to the mother, there was a conversation which took place silently. And the mother remarked, I was so happy. I was so happy. Rarely you find such a person, such a soul. What happened, mother? He says, I asked him because I know who he is. Whatever he wants, he was ready to give. And what he asked, mother, give me more faith and bhakti in my guru. And mother said, but you already have. She says, I want more. Ye dil mange more. What? Not money, nothing. Not success, not siddhi, not experience. He said, give me more faith and more bhakti for my guru. Mother has said, this is the rarest of the rare. And it is this which brings results. So here we have the perfect recipe for sadhana. It cannot be fabricated. Even if you wish, it won't come out. It's not something mechanically you can say. And if you say and the divine takes it seriously, then you had it. Mother says that. Never say to the divine, even, not exact word, but something like that. Even passingly that I am yours. Because if the divine accepts it, then the whole world cannot keep you away. He says, never say. Because if you say that, then you are finished. After that, you will be drawn here, there, one hand here. But you will be pulled. Because how can there be anyone who can ever, whole world on one side cannot pull you away from the divine. So she used to say, if you say this, think twice or 10 times. She has not used the word think twice, 10 times. And for a long time, divine will not say yes because he knows. But the day the divine says yes, then the whole world cannot keep you away from him. So she says, to him I have surrendered all will, life, self. For him I am ready to give all my blood, drop by drop. If such is his will, with complete joy, and nothing in his service can be sacrificed, for all is perfect delight. If anyone can show me a single bhakti sutra which touches this height. You all have bhakti, geet and all this, no? Bhajan, bhakti, bhajan. I am aware of almost most of them. Well, there's a tradition. But look at to what level she has taken bhakti. It's not just about putting some flowers, some agarbatti and asking, I'm a bhakti because every day I'm going. Ravana was also doing such a bhakti and asking things. There are even people who say, why should we give anything to the divine? Divine has everything. Look at the stupidity. Are you are giving, that's the transaction. But you cannot do it with the idea that I am doing it as a good transaction. Because that's how, you know, that Tagore's poem, that I am giving. So he hesitantly gives one grain of wheat and that turns into a grain of gold. But if you do it with the idea, okay, this is a good strategy. Mother says that this is the highest path, swiftest. But you cannot do it with this idea that I am going to get something, so it's a good strategy to hand over, because then you are in trouble. One little story of Sri Aurobindo, when some people stole jackfruit from some garden, but they justified it that anyways, we'll make it and send to Sri Aurobindo for prasad. And Sri Aurobindo would hardly eat. So this is a story told by the person who had done it. So they made very nice jackfruit vegetable and puris. And as was the custom, many of these people would send it to Sri Aurobindo. Sri Aurobindo would usually just taste it. Sometimes he would just look at it and the rest would come back. Now they are waiting. Nothing came back. Nothing. Later on the tiffin came empty. Look at the leela. So they asked, what happened to all the puri and jackfruit? So the disciples said, we don't know. Sri Aurobindo, he did that. He tasted just a little. Then he suddenly asked all of us to have it. Ways of the Lord. That day he asked everybody present to have it and we relished it very much. So these are the ways of the Lord. So if we do this with the idea, oh, I am giving, so I'll get, you know, this will turn into a grain of gold, then it doesn't work. It has to be the spontaneous urge from the deepest sense. And if it has come, that means one is through everything else. This is the last thing that comes. And that's what she is showing us, the path. That's why she says, if you ask the path, then it is self-giving which makes it short and sweetest and free of all problem, but it comes to rarest of the rare. The mother has taught us the way, what is meant by self-giving. 24 hours, it was only that Sri Aurobindo and his work, the Lord and his work. Nothing else occupied her. Of course, she met people, she even had food, so very little. She would play also, but everything was one single story of serving the Lord, loving the Lord, and her prayer also, that we should know more about the Lord so that we can love Him more, better, and serve Him better. So I think as we enter Mother's birthday, there's something beautiful to remember. Jai Ma.